Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, October 11, 2017. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Free Speech Task Force to be Created, Students, Faculty to be Included on It, by Julie Worth Urbana. An appearance by a conservative speaker at the University of Illinois last week went off without any of the disruption seen on other campuses in recent months. To avoid problems in the future, the campus is appointing a task force to develop policies on maintaining both free speech and a welcoming environment for all in today's highly charged political environment, a vexing issue for colleges across the U.S. Interim Provost John Wilkins said it's not a reaction to any recent event. His office has been studying how to deal with these kinds of challenging conversations for months, led by Provost Fellow Kevin Hamilton, a professor of new media. It's the entire climate that we're dealing with, what we see happening throughout the United States. We have wanted not to be caught unaware by this, Wilkins said Monday. He hopes to appoint a task force in the next month made up of faculty, administrators, and students to develop permanent policies for those situations. The goal is protecting free speech, but also engaging with the divisive sorts of things we would see with speakers in a way that doesn't preclude it, he said. Part of education is being uncomfortable. I think we want to make sure this is not about excluding that kind of discomfort, but how we engage the university. At a Senate Executive Committee meeting on Monday, Chancellor Robert Jones commended U of I police, student affairs staff members, and students themselves for the way Thursday's event happened. No one shouted down the speaker, Charles Kirk of Turning Point USA, or prevented anyone from speaking, and students carried out their right to peaceful protest, he said. Jones said it's important to think about policies, but he also thinks the only path forward is to have real conversations about the divisive issues involved, the ability to talk and understand the other, listen to the other side, their perspective, he said. Jones hopes to launch a series of critical conversations, bringing together people with different viewpoints and perspectives to talk about everything from free speech to immigration and diversity. We may not always agree, but we can find a different way of dialoguing and reacting to controversies, he said. He sponsored a similar series as president of the University at Albany, the first one about race. People were reluctant, but it was one of the more engaging conversations I've ever been a part of, he said. People could speak honestly without fear of being labeled. There appears to be little sentiment for a three strikes you're out policy adopted last week by the University of Wisconsin, which promises to suspend and expel students who disrupt campus speeches and presentations. Critics say that measure abridges free speech with no definition of what constitutes disruption. That doesn't fit well with the culture here, Wilkins said. Professor Bruce Rosenstock presented a resolution Monday, sponsored with two other senators, calling for a report on ways to balance freedom of speech and academic freedom with the goal of creating a welcoming climate and safe environment for all university members who want their voices to be heard and respected in our common struggle against the alarming growth of open displays of intolerance and bigotry on college campuses today. Rosenstock agreed to pull the resolution from the agenda after learning about plans for the task force. He said campuses everywhere are confronting questions of when speech veers into hate speech and who makes that decision, when protests infringe on the rights of the speaker, and what the difference is between feeling unsafe and feeling uncomfortable. He quoted Harvard history professor Jill Lepore, who wrote recently in The New Yorker that restricting speech is like trying to waltz with a wolf. Every hate speech code that has been challenged in court has been found unconstitutional. Some have been lifted, others disavowed. Nevertheless, a generation has come of age knowing nothing but the wolf, she wrote. A new Brookings Institution study found that 1 out of 2 students believes that colleges should prohibit certain speech or expression of viewpoints that are offensive or based against certain groups of people. Not all speech is equal, she argued, because some is true and some is not. Universities, she said, have a unique responsibility to the unflinching search for truth and the fearless unmasking of error, as well as to freedom of speech, whose premise, however idealized, is that in a battle between truth and error, truth in an open field will always win. Rosenstock's resolution also criticized a line in a September 24 mass email to the campus from Jones, which decried bigotry overall, but also referenced anti-Semitic attacks hidden under the guise of anti-Zionist rhetoric. One of the most hotly contested debates on campuses today has to do with how to draw the line between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism, and how to develop speech code policies that are fair to all viewpoints, the resolution said. Jones's email followed a campus smashing fascism rally several weeks earlier that led to tensions between pro-Israeli and pro-Palestinian groups. But that was just one of many things prompting his statement, Wilkins said. If we had to do it all over again, we would call out anti-Muslim actions as well, Wilkins said. There was no intent to equate anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism. Unit 4 Schools. Drafts of High School Schematics Released by Tim Mitchell Champagne. It will be another 5 years before construction is complete, but architects on Tuesday night unveiled the first glimpse at what Champaign's new and improved high schools could look like. Representatives from Chicagoland's Perkin and Williams and Urbana's IGW Architecture presented the school board with schematics, all marked draft in big letters, for the two priciest projects of the 6-school, $183.4 million referendum passed by voters last November. This is the first public document to come forward since our visioning of what the schools will be like, School Board President Chris Kloppel said. The renovation and expansion plans for Central, $87.1 million in upgrades and updates, and Centennial, $63.3 million, that were shown in the renderings, include many of the same features laid out previously by Unit 4 officials. Among the highlights at Central, construction of an atrium directly to the north of the current building. A single-door career and technical education music wing planned for the west side, with classrooms, a band room, vocal room, and theater in the middle, and a gymnasium further east. A weight room, fitness room, and storage on the lower level, with science labs, classrooms, and a media center on the second level, and additional classrooms on the third. There were no drawings or discussions showing what would become of the nearby neighborhood properties Unit 4 has purchased, in part for athletic fields and extracurricular activities. At Centennial, drawings showed a new administration center located at the entrance of the current facility, most of the new construction happening on two ends, with an academic wing to the south and a gymnasium, natatorium, and career and technical education wing to the north. A second floor with additional classrooms, an auditorium and band, drama and art rooms. These drawings give us an idea of what fits into each space and what to do with the space, Klobel said. The school board is scheduled to consider approving the schematic designs for the two high schools at its January 22 meeting. Once that happens, work on building designs is expected to continue through June 2018. Champaign County Board. Nursing home sale proposal search tentatively okayed, but reversal of decision possible, by Tom Kasich, Urbana. Champaign County Board members Tuesday gave tentative approval to releasing a request for proposals for the sale of the county nursing home, but it's possible the 10-7 vote could be reversed next week when the board, including four Democrats missing from Tuesday night's committee of the whole session, meets for its regular October meeting. Voting to release the request for proposals, which could lead to the sale of the nursing home to a private operator as early as January, were all nine Republicans present and Democrat Patsy Petrie. The other seven Democrats present voted against its release. I look at it as if I was trying to sell my house to find out if there's a market for it, said Petrie, a Champaign Democrat. There was an indication by the voters in a vote in April that we at least should explore what are the possibilities. There may be no market. We have no idea. Releasing the request for proposals, she said, doesn't mean that we sell it. It just gives us information. Rantoul Republican Jack Anderson agreed. I want to find out if this is sellable, he said. But a bigger showdown, Champaign Democrat Josh Hartke said Tuesday, will come at November's board meeting when the county budget for 2018 will be voted on. He and most other board Democrats, he predicted, will support a budget that calls for 12 months of county funding for the nursing home. Republicans already have lined up for a budget that calls for only 6 months of county funding, based on the assumption that the financially troubled facility would be sold early in 2018. The main thing I would point out is that not once on any vote on the nursing home has the number actually gotten high enough to sell it, said Hartke, a reference to the fact that it will take 15 of 22 board members to vote to sell the institution. I have counted the votes. I have commitments. It's 9, 10, 11 votes that are definitely no's on voting it. You could see that here tonight. There were 7 against even issuing the RFP, and I can guarantee you that at least 2 or 3 of my missing members are definite no's on selling the nursing home. Hartke said the county should include 12 months of nursing home operation in the next year's budget. If they have the 15 votes to sell it, they'll have the 15 votes to fix the budget. If you don't have the 15 votes to sell it, then you don't have the 15 votes to fix the budget back to maintain it, he said. There would be no way to pay off these vendors, owed about $3.5 million. No way to pay off staff, no way to take care of all our needs after the 1st of July. Also Tuesday, the board approved a resolution setting Halloween trick-or-treat hours in unincorporated areas of the county as 6 to 8 p.m. October 31st. And the board signed off on an agreement between the county's Animal Control Department and the University of Illinois Small Animal Clinic for a new animal sterilization service for dogs and cats owned by county residents. Animal Control would make the appointments and collect the fee, and U of I veterinary medicine students would perform the surgeries using a mobile trailer unit about twice a month. From the local section, Tom Kasich, Champaign-Urbana's Heart and Sense of History, Half Century Club, Turkey Trot Bookend November. Champaign-Urbana will mark two notable anniversaries in November, the 94th meeting of the Half Century Club and the 50th running of the Urbana Park District's Turkey Trot. For a Champaign-Urbana townie or one with aspirations, neither is to be missed. They're a reminder that when you remove the gloss, glamour, and numbers of the big university in the middle of the town, Champaign-Urbana is just a big small town, one with a heart and a sense of history. The Turkey Trot had an ominous beginning on November 28, 1968. A driving rainstorm on Thanksgiving Day caused the park district and race director Robin Hall, who a few years later would become director of the entire park district, to postpone what was optimistically but correctly billed as the first annual Turkey Trot to the following Saturday. The race had been planned to begin at the bottom of Cannonball Hill in Crystal Lake Park. A story in the News Gazette a few days later reported that the event was a success, that two turkeys were raffled away, and that ribbons were awarded to the top three finishers in several categories, including a 220-yard sprint for mothers. No explanation for the mothers-only race was offered. By 1986, according to a News Gazette story, there were between 250 and 300 runners in the competitive race. It's a much bigger deal now. This year's Turkey Trot, set for 9 a.m. Thanksgiving Day, November 23, will be a casual or competitive one-mile walk-run through Crystal Lake Park, beginning near the lake house. As many as 2,000 participants are expected, weather permitting, with ribbons going to the first 1,000 participants across the finish line. 20 turkeys will be given away, along with 30 to 40 more prizes, Park District spokeswoman Dana Mancuso said. The event is free, although donations to the Park District's Youth Scholarship Fund are encouraged. Last year's Turkey Trot raised more than $1,000 and has grown into a big, colorful community homecoming with people from all over the county getting reacquainted in the park for an hour or so before their family Thanksgiving gatherings. The Park District hopes that this year's golden anniversary of the Turkey Trot prompts people to share their favorite stories about the event. Mancuso will collect and showcase a limited number of Turkey Trot memories from the past 50 years, both on the Park District's website and at the event. If you have recollections from the Turkey Trot, the older the better, email them to urbanaparks@urbanaparks.org. My favorite Turkey Trot memory was the time about 10 years ago when a light snow fell on Champaign-Urbana hours before the event, and Park District staff tried to mark the snow-crusted course with little red flags, but dozens of kids, including our now 14-year-old granddaughter Julia, plucked them out of the ground like flowers. Humorous chaos ensued. A few weeks before the Turkey Trot, at 5:30 p.m. on November 1, the Half Century Club will hold its 94th annual and only meeting of the year at Urbana High School. The Half Century Club started off as an outshoot of the Old Settlers Club, an informal group of Champaign County pioneers who a century or so ago would gather every fall to celebrate the harvest and renew friendships. This is a club with loose membership requirements and no dues. It used to be that you had to have been born or had lived in Urbana for 50 years or more. First, the Urbana residency requirement was removed, then the longevity prerequisite. Now you just have to have an interest in local history and a willingness to set aside a couple of hours to honor people and institutions that have made this a great community. This year's honorees are retired Judge Harry Clem and his wife Judy, and Anna Merritt, a longtime Urbana School Board member and one of the founders of the CU Schools Foundation. The program will recognize the 50th anniversary of the beginning of Parkland College, presented by Seamus Riley, and the college's Vice President for Institutional Advancement. There also will be a local history trivia contest, a sing-along, and music provided by the Urbana High School Choral Ensemble. Tickets, which include a catered buffet dinner, are $33 a person. Call Norma Bean at 359-1360 for ticket information. Champaign City Council. More diverse offerings. SBDC to serve more women, minorities. By Natalie Wickman, Champaign. The county's Small Business Development Center is trying to recruit more minority and female clients. Don Elmore, the SBDC director, presented an update on his center's work to the City Council on Tuesday. The center, which exists under the county's Economic Development Corp, provides free consulting and advising services to businesses ranging from one employee to employees in the low hundreds. Elmore said, from 2013 to now, the center's Champaign clients have been 17.6% minority-owned businesses and 20.9% women-owned businesses. To increase those numbers, Elmore said, he'll be doing outreach focused on individual neighborhoods. He said this will involve going to neighborhood associations, the Champaign Community Coalition, city councils, and the county board. We want to get a tighter focus on what opportunities or events are there for us to reach people who don't know us, who don't know about us, Elmore said. In other business, the council approved a meeting to discuss Bradley Avenue between McKinley and Prospect after that area saw two deaths within the past year. Both involved elderly persons crossing the street and getting hit by a vehicle. Marjorie Roberts, 76, was looking for her dog when she was hit last December. Robert Milligan, 67, was crossing the 900 block of Bradley last Tuesday when he was hit, according to Champaign Police Lieutenant Bruce Ramsey. There was a little bit of a rise in that road where you can't really see what's coming, Councilmember Greg Stock said. Councilmember Clarissa Nickerson, foreman, requested the meeting happen as soon as possible. It's an issue of increasing pedestrian safety, Foreman said, noting that additional street signal lights and signage may be needed. Judge gives man 38-year prison term. DeFanis, hefty stretch meant as deterrent, by Marcus Jackson, Urbana. Saying he needed to fashion a sentence that will deter individuals in similar situations from committing similarly heinous offenses, a Champaign County judge sentenced an Urbana man who participated in an armed robbery of a gas station to 38 years in prison. With his mother and other family members seated behind him in the courtroom, 24-year-old Kydell Brown turned to them, apologized, and said, "Wipe those tears. Tough times don't last. Tough people do." But Judge Tom DeFanis pointed to Brown's criminal history, that dates back to a 2006 juvenile adjudication, as well as three other previous felony charges, including robbery and unlawful possession of a weapon, in determining his sentence for the July 2016 armed robbery that called for a sentence of 21 to 45 years. "We have here a young man who hasn't really made mistakes," DeFantis said. "He commits serious felony offenses." Brown was found guilty in August of the armed robbery at the Shell gas station at 1812 North Cunningham Avenue, Urbana, where he and co-defendant Kelvin T. Hartfield, 22, entered the station at 12:50 a.m. that day with white T-shirts wrapped around their heads and ordered the female clerk to the floor at gunpoint. They made off with cash, cigars, cigarillos, and multiple cartons of Newport cigarettes. In court, it was revealed that Hartfield threatened the clerk with the gun while Brown held the garbage bag that the pair filled with cigarettes. Hartfield was convicted earlier this year of armed robbery and subsequently firing a gun in the direction of four Champaign County Sheriff's deputies, who happened upon him shortly after the robbery. DeFantis sentenced him in May to 90 years in prison for those offenses. Assistant State's Attorney Troy Lazar, while recommending a sentence of 42 years for Brown, played a short video obtained from Brown's cell phone, dated early July 2016, where the defendant was brandishing handguns while yelling obscenities and the names of some of his associates. The defendant has managed to amass a concerningly large number of various serious offenses, Class 1s, Class 2s, burglary, robbery, armed robbery now, Lazar said. Unequivocally, he is dangerous. This individual is involving himself with firearms and high-level criminal offenses. Through his attorney, Assistant Public Defender Stephanie Corum, Brown asked for a furlough of 24 to 48 hours so that he can see his three young children before being sent off to prison. The motion was denied by DeFantis. In asking for the minimum sentence of 21 years, Corum said that Brown's goal is to be the father that he never had. Corum argued that as Brown has tried to straighten out his life, various barriers have prevented that. He says lack of job opportunities have prevented him from finding work, and when he was participating in GED courses, the system turned over just as he was preparing to take the exam. Brown's mother, Dionysia Terry, took the stand on Tuesday and admitted that while her son has made some mistakes, he shouldn't pay for them for an extended amount of time. The video played in the court today again was somewhat chilling, DeFantis said of Brown, who will get credit for 178 days already served. It is an indication of the history, character, and condition of this defendant. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated Wednesday, October 11, 2017. Please stay tuned.